I think it's important to reiterate your point that there, for years now, any concept that it's either the Cloud Foundry application runtime or that PaaS experience and kind of versus a Kubernetes based experience, it just hasn't made any sense to the enterprises that are adopting both, frankly. There's plenty of use cases that don't fit into a PaaS style architecture. That's okay, right? If you look at the breadth of architectures that the typical enterprise deals with, there's a tons of applications that, frankly, if you want to make a container based architecture, you need to just wrap the thing in a container and operate it that way. And that's very different than a PaaS experience, which is optimized for the developer productivity, right? It gets rid of a lot of concerns that they would otherwise have to deal with. It was, of course, originally an optimization from VM-based infrastructure, where you'd have to provision the VM, and you'd have to go install your middleware, and then you'd go about the code push process. So the PaaS experience that Cloud Foundry offers is about optimizing that developer time. Let them focus on business problems. Let them focus on the app they're trying to build, not on the plumbing underneath it. And Kubernetes made infrastructure more approachable, right? But it's still an infrastructure-centric platform. And so it's appropriate for a lot of use cases, but it actually pairs really well. Now, a couple of years ago, when the Cloud Foundry community started working with Kubernetes, and it was a joint project from VMware, Pivotal, and Google, the community was looking to solve the deployment and management of Kubernetes so that it could live side by side with that PaaS experience. So we have a long history, a couple years now, of working with Kubernetes. Another thing that had been occurring in our ecosystem was that as each of the vendors was taking Cloud Foundry to market, some of them were choosing to do it on top of earlier versions of Kubernetes. And this goes back as far as 2015. The team at the time, it was HPE, but then they ended up moving to SUSE as a whole team, right? As SUSE acquired some of the Helion assets from HPE, that also meant that teams were moved over to SUSE. They were working to take Cloud Foundry's components, package them into Docker containers, and then deploy them into early versions of Kubernetes. That's how they brought it to market. So since then, if we kind of fast forward to today, all right, so what are all the components that we now have that are in the upstream community, in the Cloud Foundry community? We've got an effort, which is actually at this point quite mature, which was called Project Arini, or is called Project Arini. It's about allowing Kubernetes to be a part of that Cloud Foundry architecture, right? And eliminate the, not eliminate, but to use Kubernetes as an alternative as the migration's occurring to the what's called the Diego-based orchestration layer. Now, that's a layer that was never intended to be a general purpose container orchestration tool, right? It was purpose-built because Cloud Foundry's been around from, before Docker even existed. The second component that we had in the upstream before kubectl came in was an effort called Project Quarks, which kind of took some code from SUSE called Fizzle. It would take the type of release artifact that our project teams were generally releasing for their component of the system, kind of work it into a usable Docker image, and then you'd use Helm and some scripts to kind of deploy that into Kubernetes. So what was missing was, and a lot of the teams, both the Arini team and the Project Quarks team, they were using this code that SUSE had been working on, and it's really the basis of the SUSE product called SCF, or SUSE Cloud Foundry. What SCF was and what it became was kubectl. It's a distribution of Cloud Foundry that is Kubernetes native. That allows you to enable that Project Arini capability. You could also choose not to. It'll package, the Diego cells and run them as containers, so you kind of have this nested containerization happening. But ideally, it will take the Arini configuration, the work from Arini, and then take some of the tooling that the Project Quarks team has been working on, and it creates a Kubernetes-native distribution of Cloud Foundry. So that's what kubectl is today. They recently hit, you know, their 1.0 release. It might seem like, you know, we just brought it in as a project, it quickly moved to 1.0. But the reason that history matters is that this approach has been evolving within the context of SUSE, and then it became a broader community around it with SCF, and now as a, you know, upstream foundation project called KubeCF, it's got that long history behind it.
It's an incubation stage. How different is, you know, the evolution, I mean, of the project at Cloud Foundry, where, you know, you have incubation, then what are the other stages, and how do you foresee the project to evolve, and do you have any timeline for that?
So the first is, within the Cloud Foundry Foundation, we have a very simple project lifecycle. When a project enters, it's generally an incubating project. It can then graduate to active status. And then when that code base has served its useful life, within the context of our, you know, our community's efforts, it can move to the attic, right? And we move projects through that life cycle on a fairly regular basis, all the way through, because we're always evolving our architecture. The difference between incubation and active, really, it comes down to signaling to the broader ecosystem that something is not just production-ready code, but there's enough commercialization activity and enough diverse interest involved in the project that it's something that they can, you know, they can rely on if they're more risk adverse, right? So if we look at KubeCF and think about its status as an incubating project, it's not a judgment of the code itself, because again, it has a history. Two, it has a number of a couple of the distributions are already commercializing based on it, and so it's going to fairly quickly kind of reach the point where it's actively being used by many of the distributions. Now, what's the future of KubeCF? Well, right now we can look at it as the easiest path to a Kubernetes native Cloud Foundry for pure open source users. There are some other efforts that are happening in parallel that are taking a look at each component of the Cloud Foundry architecture. I'll give you an example that's fairly simple. The logging and metrics pipeline component of that architecture. And they're reevaluating a lot of the design decisions that were made in a VM-centric world and saying, you know, are there more kind of Kubernetes idiomatic ways that we can deliver the same capability? And so there's a collection of design patterns that are being built. And all of the projects that make up our architecture are going through this learning process to make sure that they can reassess some of those assumptions they made. And what that's doing is it's leading us towards this place where each component is evolving, and the work that KubeCF has to do, or some of the things that the logic to create that KubeCF process, like the Fizzle project from Quarks, a lot of the work there is going to become unnecessary, and that's kind of by design, right? So we have these two convergent paths where, as the project teams re-architect, they're simplified for ease of deployment to Kubernetes, and the KubeCF code base can actually reduce in its complexity, and so we have these converging things that are going to come together, ideally come together in a way that let someone today take KubeCF, deploy the whole system to Kubernetes, and then they get to take advantage of the simplicity that gets enabled as the project teams modify their code.
And since it's a distribution, which also means a lot of, you know, members of the ecosystem, platform ecosystem, they can take it and, you know, package it or integrate it with their own offering. So there are two questions. Number one is, how do you see the ecosystem grow? Second is that, how do you ensure that it kind of remain kind of compliant so that, you know, one distribution is not totally different from other distribution?
Yeah, so there's a couple things there. When I describe it as a Kubernetes distribution, an argument would be made that, well, why is the upstream providing a distribution? One of the strengths of the way the Cloud Foundry community operates is that we've always offered a distribution. And so there still is a distribution called CF Deployment that's based on a VM-centric architecture that uses the Cloud Foundry Bosch platform to orchestrate infrastructure as a service environments or you know virtualized environments like vSphere in order to deploy VMs and then you know run the system on top of it. Now that's going to be super important for a long time, right? Because there's a huge number of deployments of CF that, of course, they're predominantly virtual machine based. So kubectl is kind of the way to look at it in a Kubernetes infrastructure world. It's intended to do the same thing that the VM centric distro does, which is it's a starting point for commercialization. Now, the second part of your question is, how do we get consistency across the distros? Well, between both the CF deployment VM centric distro as well as kubectl. The commonality there is that it's the components that they're sewing together create the Cloud Foundry platform. And our certification continues to be based on, as it has for nearly 5 years now, continues to be based on the idea that a certified distribution uses those components in an unmodified way and puts them together to create that developer experience. So, regardless of whether you're deploying the Kubernetes or you're deploying the virtual machines, regardless of the certified vendor that you use or if you use the upstream distributions, you should have that same developer experience available to those developers. So that's what our certification's focused on. Now, each one of those approaches and all of the commercial distributions operate potentially very differently. Operational consistency is less a concern for our ecosystem and our community because many of these providers are offering it as a service. Some of those that do it as a subscription-based software delivery, they have a lot of tooling around operations that's specific to them, plus all of the other value that they bring together. And so CF really fits into, if you think about the commercial distributions, it fits into a bigger product or a bigger platform. And so what we really needed to focus on for certification, and we continue to focus on is that developer experience of the core Cloud Foundry capability consistent between the distros.
And what does it mean for big vendors like SUSE or SAP? And also there are other members of the Cloud Foundry ecosystem like Anynines or Starkevin, who are like also offer consultancy.
I think the main thing that the kubectl distribution is going to open up for the ecosystem is it's going to make the conversations that that many of them have around, do I use Kubernetes or do I use Cloud Foundry? I mean, it's always kind of been answer should have been you use both. But that answer becomes a little bit easier because not only do you use both, but the architecture kind of fits one on top of the other very nicely. And that means that not only is it simpler from a concern about dueling stacks, even though the use cases are complementary, that concern of dueling stacks goes away as you layer the two on top of each other.
Also, as I've been like monitoring Cloud Foundry for a very long time, also the work that you have been doing with Kubernetes, is like kubectl like final iteration, or we will continue to see the evolution of how Cloud Foundry and Kubernetes are working together? And the funny thing is that you both are part of the same family, Linux Foundation, CNCF, and Cloud Foundry.
Yeah, well, the main thing is that nothing's ever done, right? So I've been involved in Cloud Foundry since the foundation started back in early 2015. The community has a few things that it uses as kind of its guiding lights, right? Guiding principles. The first one, and this is very clear right now, is that we've completely reconverged as an ecosystem around, embracing the Kubernetes-based infrastructure as being the, most popular and rising, infrastructure approach. And we believe that Cloud Foundry offers an enormous amount of value to enterprises that are trying to both deal with container-centric infrastructure management and developer productivity, right? So we can bring these two together. So we're focused on bringing developer productivity to the Kubernetes-based infrastructure platforms. But the second thing is that evolution is just kind of it's in our nature, right? We've been evolving this architecture as a community for years now. generally the CF community has taken an approach that it builds what's needed to deliver on its first mission, developer productivity, if nothing else is available. And as other open source communities stand themselves up, mature their software, and reach the point that, you know, these mission critical applications that rely on Cloud Foundry can also rely on them, they get brought into the architecture, and we get to retire code that our community no longer has to maintain. And I think the last point that I'd make, you know, kind of reference the, yeah, I mean, we're all part of the broader Linux Foundation family. More importantly, though, the technical community has a massive amount of overlap, right? You know, if you think about the engineering teams that are supporting Kubernetes, right? Let's just talk about VMware as one example. VMware has an enormous investment in Kubernetes, and they continue to increase that investment. You know, the amount of people they have working on it, the amount of commercialization activity around it. But VMware also has now a huge amount, with the acquisition of Pivotal, huge amount of investment in Cloud Foundry, which they're continuing and actually ramping up, because this mission of bringing the two together is exactly in line with what they're looking to achieve. Now, we see the same thing with SAP, with IBM, with SUSE. So that big overlap presents a lot of opportunities for everybody.